Welcome to our Arnie's birthday Zoom. Ed Potts joins us. He's 64 years young today. We could be playing the Beatles song for him, but we're not going to do that. Ed may need an introduction to Purdue sports fans, though he doesn't around Purdue basketball. It seems there's, he was a student manager colleague of mine in 1980. So we are the reason why Purdue is in the Final Four in 2024, because we finally figured it was long enough to come. But first of all, happy birthday. You're a little bit younger than I am, but it's always a special day when you're celebrating your birthday.
Thank you. Thank you, Alan. And I can't imagine a better birthday present than we got a little early birthday present with Purdue going to the Final Four. Very emotional day. I know for you, certainly for the people that my family and the people we were sitting around that have been fans for such a long time, that have been to locations where we thought it was that year and ended in disappointing fashion. And I was with my dad in North Carolina when Phil Ford and that team beat us, and we had a hotel for the night. We had a hotel for the night. My dad says, get in the damn car. We're driving home from North Carolina. The, Detroit in 88, Knoxville. I mean, those were some bitter, bitter pills to swallow. So I think it experiencing that made it even more sweet.
And for me, it was awesome because as we were walking out of the building, we had you and I had a moment and I met your lovely wife, Reagan. And what an experience. And, you know, you keep the journalist hat on to some extent, but even for those of us that were there and around the program and around in 1980, and we'll hit that in a little bit. It is very, very special. And it was an example to me. And again, we can't play it straight down the middle here. This is a program that has been you just couldn't be happier for Matt Painter. You couldn't be happier for these players that have seemed from every indication and how they treat our staff at Golden Black to how they treat others. They couldn't be better people. And it was great to see that finally come to pass.
Yeah. I mean, it was emotional enough. And then when I'm seeing this stuff on, whether it was on Twitter or folks were forwarding it to me, that Robbie after the game, Robbie Humble, and he's, I think, has just become an unbelievably talented color guy in any level. He's, Big Ten Network's going to lose Robbie because he's national talent, and Raphael Davis the same. I text back and forth. Raphael went to Purdue and had a lot of classes with my son Austin, and so I'll text him, and sometimes he'll respond in between segments on the network because we're bouncing different things off of each other, and it, I can't even imagine the players, Painter's players, how badly they wanted it for him, it was emotional. And I lost my dad, many years ago. He's been gone now longer than he was alive, but he was here in 1980, when we went, and literally he passed in 81. Alan, about this time of year. So it's a very emotional time of year for me every year. And so he passed in 81, and he passed away on March 28th. So we knew that day he wasn't going to make it. And when people talk about the rivalry, the Purdue rivalry, the last words your father says to you is, "I suppose the damn Hoosiers are going to win it."
Yeah. Right? Oh my God.
That was with Isaiah Thomas and that group that my dad Potsy, everybody called him Potsy, was, I mean, the rivalry to him was everything, and so he didn't care who won. He just didn't want it to be IU. Maybe that's why he died before the final game. But
I know that's like 2 days before. Right?
Yeah.
And Well, and it's funny because you and I have to talk a little bit about our history, because you and I were basketball managers, and I got to know you and appreciate who you were. And we were part of the 1980 as sophomores, the 1980 Final Four team. So we enjoyed that experience, and some eclectic members of that team. Certainly, I think this year's team, as much as was a lot more together than that one was, but that one knew how to win. And win at the right time. But I have to go back. I'm going to retrace. I'll go back to birthdays in your household, growing up in Brookston, and we're going to, and it'll kind of segue into the one part of our discussion too on your association with McDonald's, which is a great story. But tell me about what your birthdays were like and growing up. And yes, you lost your dad at a way too early age, but I know you were at a close family.
We had just unbelievable memories. So we joke that my dad only took vacation like 1 week a year because all of us boys are born in the month of April. I'm April 2nd. My brother Tom's 1 year younger than me on April 4th. My brother Mike is also on April 4th, 3 years later, and my brother Tim's April 28th. So, and my mom's birthday is in the middle of all of that. So the a April is the birthday month for the Potts family. Grew up going to every Purdue event, that dad, would take us to. Never missed a football game, never missed a basketball game. We'd go see the Cubs 3 or 4 times a year. He's just a huge sports fan. And my dad lived in Brookston his whole life. I mean, he grew up in Brookston, and when my mom and dad got married, they bought a house in Brookston, built a national home. And then we built, a house to accommodate five kids when my little sister came along. I just loved growing up in a small town, and going to Purdue wasn't really an option. Like you said, my grandparents had the McDonald's store, the first McDonald's store in West Lafayette, and then my parents and aunts and uncles and grandparents opened the store on Stadium Avenue. I mean, how do you not, become, you're going to go to Purdue no matter what, right? I mean, we had to block the door open in 1970 when that store opened on campus. It was amazing. And I was too young to work in the kitchen, but I got to wipe tables off and just talk to people when they came in. And somehow we always made kickoff, even if it
I
was
know
crazy.
that's a yeah. Yeah, that's a great story. And you know that, and if you know Ed Potts, you know he's an optimist. He's a can-do person. When he comes in the room, you can tell on the Zoom already, he kind of lights it up in a positive vein. Though there's been difficult things in your life, and I get that. And one of the challenging, in a fascinating story, and we're going to link a couple of your Zooms that you did from your home in Florida. But your story, your relationship in McDonald's goes. Is family deep, and that's because your great uncle is Ray Kroc. And so much has been written. I think I've read two or three books on the McDonald's story, and of course the movie The Founder. But you've really not only you're a historian because it's family business, but just talk about that relationship and the fact that your role, your family's role in the city of West Lafayette. We've talked about Bruno's, and Bruno's closing a few days ago. Well, you had a restaurant that is iconic on campus as well, and another one restaurant in Lafayette. But just talk about that now on that birthday, and you reflect on all those experiences with the McDonald's and what that has meant to your family all these years.
Well, I'm the oldest of the five kids, and the oldest of the grandkids, I was born in 1960, April of 1960. The store had already been open for 2 years. So my grandparents opened McDonald's store number 52 at 212 Brown Street, which is where Bruno's closed. Bruno's moved into the original McDonald's building, really kept the footprint the same. To me, as an unbelievable Bruno's fan,
Yeah, me too.
that store closing and the development that's going to go on there, that building is just a piece of history. So it's kind of heartbreaking to lose Bruno's and that address, the 212 Brown Street address. So the 52nd McDonald's, West Lafayette, was chosen by my grandparents solely because my mom was going to Purdue. They lived in Oak Park, Illinois, a suburb of Chicago, and my granddad worked for Kraft Foods. So when he decided he wanted to go into business with his brother-in-law, who, you know, listened to the podcast, he didn't really, you know, love a great deal. They had a kind of a contentious relationship, but he just really believed in the business model. So when they said, well, where do you want your franchise? And he said, how about West Lafayette? It wasn't McDonald's suggestion. It was my grandfather's suggestion that a college town might be a good location. And it was a phenomenal location. It was the number one store in the company from the time that it opened. And then it wasn't even, I don't think it was even a year later, the Wabash River flooded, the levee flooded. And it was a really challenging time, you know, for them. Further contention with my Uncle Ray and my grandfather, but they survived. The store went right back to being number one once they, you know, got it reopened. And then they opened Stadium Avenue in 1970, 605 Stadium Avenue. That store has since been flipped around, and they put the drive-through in. There was no drive-through at that store originally. And then the store on 510 Sagamore Parkway, I saw something on Facebook. I don't do Facebook. My wife does. And there was history of Lafayette stuff. People will go in there and post pictures. And people were arguing that the store on 510 Sagamore Parkway, which at the time was Target, was there. Yeah. Saying that that store opened before the stadium store. Well, no, that store opened in 74. Stadium opened in 1970. I remember because it was a blizzard on my dad's opening day. It was December of 73. I mean, literally a blizzard. We
Purdue,
ended up having
Illinois State basketball game too, by the way, just as I remember. Yeah. We were going to Hawaii for the Rainbow Classic when I was in the eighth grade, but go ahead. I digress.
So we couldn't even get home. We stayed at my uncle's house in Lafayette on Brady Lane. So we could get back to open the store in the morning. So my memories of McDonald's, I mean, I knew nothing except McDonald's. Yeah. I mean, we ate there a lot. We always ordered at the counter. It was a great experience. We'd go down to the basement and eat amongst the boxes and things. But we always had to pay at the counter like regular customers. And and I said I was a McDonald's fan, like I'm a Cub fan, like I'm a Purdue fan, you know. So somebody said they liked Wendy's. I get into an argument, a debate on how could you possibly like Wendy's or Burger Chef more, you know, than McDonald's. I loved it. And so I went to work with my dad as often as I could as a kid. And then even after my dad got sick and the family had sold the stores. You know, I worked at McDonald's all through high school, all through college, just as a crew person and then a swing manager. I just loved it. I met up with a buddy of mine from West Lafayette, Jim Smith, Kirby Risk, Jim Smith, who worked at the State Road 26 McDonald's as a kid from Harrison. I mean, a ton of Frontier kids, Frontier High School kids, a ton of Harrison kids. I worked at that store, and Jim and I hadn't talked in quite some time, but we have common friends. And so we met up, hung out with his family. Reagan and I hung out with his family all night, had just a great time. And you're talking about a very successful, you know, businessman with a tremendous company, led United Way drive in Lafayette. And I know the folks who've done that back from when I was in town, who's talking about the lessons he learned working at McDonald's, you know, the foundation of every job he's had since. And I say the same thing. I have friends in Lafayette to this day, lifelong friends that I worked with at the 510 store before I became a swing manager at the new store on 26. And, you know, those are like the glory days. We look back at it like, you know, it's the best time of our lives, right?
Yeah.
And my wife says I romanticize, you know, that, because, you know, if I would have taken over, if Dad hadn't have passed away and I owned those stores, she's like, you wouldn't want to own 10 stores. You wouldn't have wanted to own 10 stores. And she's probably right, because I look back and say, the stores we had, we ran very well. But it's not that way anymore. You don't own one or two stores. You own 10 or 12. And yeah. So you're not going to be present like my grandparents and my dad and mom were. And both my uncles, my mom's yeah. sisters and their husbands. So the whole family, everybody on my mom's side of the family worked at McDonald's. So it really was a family affair.
Well, when you think about, I don't know what the figure was, but it's an amazing figure. What percentage of kids around our age, you know, that have worked in McDonald's? It's like 20 to 30% of the workforce.
I think it's almost 50. It's like 50%, Alan. It's crazy. Yeah. Because if you take people who just work, they may not have worked there very long, but they worked there. The number is insane, especially if you go back to our age.
Yeah.
You know, it's different now. You know, it's not all of my siblings worked at McDonald's except my sister Kelly. By that time, I was working at JCPenney in Lafayette, and she worked at JCPenney. But my siblings all worked at McDonald's. My brother Tom was the smartest one, because he went to the mall store so he wouldn't have to work with me.
Yeah.
But Mike and Tim both worked with me and regret it to this day, probably, that I was harder on them. I had higher expectations, right, for them than I would other employees. But it was, I loved it. Loved it.
Yeah. And the Northwestern store, the one closest to Mackey, was one of the, was I, and again, maybe urban legend, but was it one of the top? I know your 212 Brown stores was one of the top, but even later on continued to be one of the highest grossing stores in the country.
Absolutely. Especially during football season. If you looked at those weekends in particular, the numbers were, I mean, you just looked at it and say, how do we even generate that much revenue? How can you move people in and out that fast? But my grandparents always referred to Brown Street as the Golden Goose. I mean, that store is, you know, back when we were kids, Brown Street Bridge still had traffic.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So, you know, they closed the Brown Street Bridge. You think, man, that's going to doom your store, because that bridge took traffic literally right to that area. Shoppers Fair and Lums and all the
Lums,
Park and Eat. Yeah, it was, but that store did great. You know, they changed, you know, it to the mansard roof style store. I always loved the old school, you know, red and white tile and the golden arches, but there was no indoor seating when they built that store originally. So that was all.
I remember
it's a little tougher when you're in a cold weather winter state, right?
Yeah, I do remember that store as when we first moved to town in the late 60s, going to that store, and it was the first time I'd done fast food that I remembered. And very, very, very. And of course, our friends at Arnie's, who sponsor this, the Cohens are all good with our great restaurateurs, and they understand that. It's another, what Lafayette is lucky to have had the Itons and the Cohens, and still do have the Cohens.
For the record, when we come back for a football weekend, Arnie's one day, Bruno's the other.
both
were involved. My wife was like, pizza 2 days in a row. I'm like, listen, I only get to come back here every so often, so we don't miss Arnie's on a visit back, or frozen custard for that matter. Yeah.
One of the things that, you know, I thought found interesting in your podcast, and having read some of the books, you know, and finally watched the movie The Founder, which is a really, really good, interesting movie starring Michael Keaton, is I found it interesting your reconciliation. I guess that's the right word. The fact that your great uncle, your Uncle Ray, had a lot of great qualities. And there's, you know, a lot of discussion about his how he worked things out with the McDonald brothers and whether he did things that were unscrupulous. But I think your response there is interesting of not trying to keep his image, but to be realistic about what that image was and how hard he worked to get this going. And yet even your own grandfather and him were not best buds by any stretch. So talk mm-hmm. about that a bit, because it's really a fascinating story in my view.
So I, you know, grew up knowing, you know, about Ray, and I was enthralled with it, but I'm a business major. I grew up loving business. It was, so he would have been somebody I idolized, whether he was related to me or not, like Walt Disney, you know, so, you know, I would write papers in school about McDonald's. I would write papers in school about Uncle Ray. I would write papers in school whatever the topic was, I'd find a way to make it about McDonald's.
Yeah.
But my grandpa's issues with him, I didn't really understand until later. He just made it very clear. And again, because I'm the oldest, he would tell me these stories that he clearly didn't respect Ray. And it, part of it went back to my great grandmother being ill and Ray not helping with her care and that kind of thing. And the get rich quick scheme stories in the founder, that's very accurate. I mean, Ray was a very successful salesman, making, you know, what would be an unbelievable amount of money at that time, but he was never satisfied. He was always looking for that next thing. And so my grandpa kind of thought he was a slick oil salesman.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I got a little bit older, maybe 12 or 13 years old, when I realized the kind of recognition that my Uncle Ray had, yet he isn't getting respect from my grandfather, who's making a very good living at McDonald's. You know, I'm like, I think you should give the man some credit. And he just said, you know, I don't respect him, but I knew it was a good business model. And we did what we did kind of despite him, which it just wasn't going to change his mind. It came back down to the store flooding and asking for help. And Ray said, I'll just buy the store back from you, but I'm not loaning you the money. And he just never forgave him. And so the two of them really never got along. And my grandma had to kind of play peacemaker. And really, my grandpa kind of made it clear, nobody in the family likes him. Nobody in the family will like him, right?
Yeah.
So none of those papers I wrote in school got shared with my grandparents. You know, I wasn't going to, you know, tick my grandpa off, but I understood what Ray had accomplished and admired it. And so the more I read and the more research I did, I look at it and say, if you watch The Founder, so much of it is accurate. Ray actually was more concerned about replicating the McDonald's system, the process, the speedy service system, than they were. He was actually more adamant that every single location operated in a consistent manner. The McDonald's brothers had franchises. They just wanted to just sell the franchise and then walk away. And so their franchise locations weren't operating the same way. And that's, to me, it's why they failed. Absentee ownership and no adherence. Nobody was adhering those franchisees to the system. Kroc was absolutely required you to do it the way it was supposed to be done. You're not selling hot dogs. You're not selling pizza. It's going to be clean. You're going to do it this way. And so I look at it and say, he took their system more seriously than they did.
Yeah.
And in the end, they just didn't want to work that hard. I'm not saying they were lazy. They just didn't. They liked their main store. That's where they wanted to stay. So they didn't put the effort into franchising. He put all of his effort into franchising. And because they still had a say so, he had to, it was slowing down his process, trying to get them to okay changes about for simply cold weather stores, right?
Yeah.
And he got frustrated and said, I'm buying them out. I can't deal with this anymore. And they finally settled on a number. He had to borrow, you know, he gave them each $1 million after taxes.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that. He did not have that kind of cash, and borrowing that kind of money in the early 60s was crazy. He got a couple of life insurance companies to loan him money and a couple of banks based upon the real estate side of things. And he bought them out. And, you know, there was no royalty. That's the one thing in the movie that causes people to go on one side or the other. There was no royalty. It's why he was buying them out, to get them out of the business, out of the decision making, out of, you know, but he bought their name. He bought their Golden Arches. He bought the Speedy Service System. You know, you accept a check with those terms, you know, that's so I'll defend Ray from that standpoint. I don't defend the founder title. I see no reason why he needed to call himself the founder other than a way to stick them, because the original store in San Bernardino was supposed to be a part of the deal. And yeah. And when he found out it wasn't, or that they weren't going to give him the original store, then he put a McDonald's right across the street.
Yeah.
That part's true. Put him out of business. And they had to change the name of their own restaurant, which was their name, right?
Yeah.
It couldn't be McDonald's anymore. So that part is true. And so I said, and if you watch the second podcast, where it has a lot of comments, thousands of comments, 240,000 views of that podcast. I'm a kid from Brookston, Indiana.
Yeah.
I mean, that is incredible to me that people have that much interest in the story. But many of them only know McDonald's history from the founder. And that's a movie. It's not history. It's, you know, there's parts of it that are true, parts of it that are fictionalized, things that are completely left out. And, but watch it. Watch the podcast for some content to after you've seen it. But I loved it, and to me, the good and the bad parts of the movie, that's what made it accurate. Because I told my wife before we walked in, if it's accurate, if this movie's going to be accurate, we're going to feel great in the beginning, and we're going to feel kind of, you know, a little dirty at the end, and then that's true. That's how it is. And my grandpa would tell me over and over how, I think that's the thing he disliked the most, that Ray stepped on a lot of people on his way to success. But that happens in any case with that kind of success and that kind of money. You're surrounding yourself with certain people, some who stay on board, some who you have disagreements with. And, but you know, the thing that didn't change was his vision for what he wanted. And you're talking about a guy that didn't graduate from college. He didn't graduate from high school, and didn't stop at 1,000 units or 2,500 or 10,000. It was never enough. He, to me, certainly changed the fast food business, but he changed business in general. Franchising in general. It's an unbelievable story. And to accomplish all of that without a college degree, without even finishing high school, shows you what drive and ambition, along with, you know, just persistence, can accomplish.
Yeah, no doubt. And he did it in amazing fashion, and all about process. And like I said, we'll link those podcasts. It really is interesting stuff. All right, another person that's really about process is Coach Matt Painter in Purdue. And here's a guy that in trying to correlate situations, has had some difficulty, some challenging moments. He's had a heck of a lot of success. But to get now to the final four, and after some heartbreak over the last few years, but you talk about a guy that stays with process. There are some similarities. I think Matt's going to be a little more beloved maybe among his coworkers and players than maybe Ray Kroc was, but both are extremely well respected. But just talk about that. You know, you're an extreme close observer to Purdue basketball. You have been since you and I about probably started around the same time of watching Purdue basketball in the late 1960s. But just talk about what you've observed in this team, and then we'll also want to hit on that 1980 team, the last one to get to the Final Four.
So for me, Matt, and you know, saw him play every game, every home game as a player, and I remember that media guide. And you and I are we grew up the same way. We would read the media guides like it was, you know, the Bible, right? I mean, And I remember the media guide from the time Matt was a freshman, you know, said he was a basketball junkie, that he stayed up too late watching games on the West Coast and so on and so forth. And you know, how true it became. I look at, you know, when Matt came on board, we were short of talent, right? Yeah. So a little bit of a tough start. And then he got pressure from the alumni about not recruiting top talent. Why aren't we getting a top 10 guy? Why aren't we getting a top 50 guy? And so he went that route. And we had problems because those weren't Purdue kids. They, not that they weren't good players, not that they weren't good kids, but the camaraderie of the team wasn't the same. It wasn't the same. Matt wasn't recruiting. He was recruiting the players we wanted by the numbers, but he wasn't recruiting the kids who really fit his system. And once he decided, by God, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do it my way. And, you know, he started bringing in kids that stayed 4 years. He brought in kids that understand a role, kids that are willing to play off the bench. Some guys that might have played in year one and then didn't play as much in year two. I use Caleb first as a perfect example of that over the past 3 years. But, you know, what he's done is it reminds me of Butler, what Butler did when they went back to back, you know, in the Final Four, and in Indianapolis, they called it the Butler way. If you're not part of the Butler way, you know, you're not probably going to get recruited and be in the program. And Matt started bringing in the best players you can get who are willing to stay for 4 years or three years. I think it's made a world of difference. And if you saw Dokić do his little bit on Twitter, where he just says, "Hey, I give up. I actually have to say I'm jealous of Purdue and Matt Painter and the system that they've built and the love the ex-players have for the program, the love the fans have for the, not just the current players, the love for the ex-players, the former players, the crowds, Matt." I mean, I've been to most regionals. I've been to most of the NCAA games over my life. I've never seen anything like what we saw in Detroit. It was 3.5-1 Purdue fans. It's crazy. I mean, it was like a Mackey environment everywhere we went. The plane ride going out, the plane ride coming back, walking through the airports when we were in Charlotte, everywhere Purdue people, everybody stopping me to say, the non-Purdue people say, "We're rooting for you guys." That I've never experienced that. So it isn't just going to the Final Four. There's just something different about the program that's been created that is starting to be embraced. Yeah, a lot of grief about getting knocked off by the 16 seed, but kind of forgetting that we've been to the Elite Eight, you know, what, three times in recent history. Not a lot of programs can say that. You know, there are a lot of coaches, probably most coaches, they 100% know how good Matt Painter is. And for those folks who, you know, want Coach Painter gone, if we didn't get to a Final Four, he'd have so many offers. Countless offers to try to whittle through. Thank goodness we went, just to you know, let those people jump on the bandwagon. Welcome. Welcome to the bandwagon. But it's a great time to be a Boilermaker. What a great time to have your birthday. Right?
Yeah. Who would have thought we lined this up a few weeks, several weeks ago, if not a couple months ago. Yeah. Thinking this could be a possibility, but haven't happened. Okay, back to 1980, and you and I were involved with a very interesting team, coached by a very different coach. Lee Rose was certainly brilliant in his own way, somewhat at times could be a little polarizing among his players. The starting seven loved him, the other ones not as much, but he was brilliant, and he did know where his bread was buttered with Joe Barry Carroll at center and, of course, enough talent around him. But just to your memories of that and maybe any comparisons you make, if or not, to this group in 2024.
I mean, you know, I managed just my freshman and sophomore year. So yeah. I like to say, you know, my freshman year, we went to the NIT finals, right. Finished second. Unfortunately, we did finish second to IU, but
yeah,
you know, we went to the championship game, and my sophomore year, we go to the Final Four, you know, and then I dropped the microphone. Yeah. I dropped the microphone. That was two pretty good years. You know, a bunch of the guys on the team were at Krannert. You and I both were in Krannert. So I had class with a lot of the guys and got to know them on and off the court. So, but they weren't as cohesive as this team, you know, seems to be. And we, you know, as managers, you know, back then, I don't know how it works today, but back then, you know, we would set practice up at what, 1? Yeah. And then we'd scrimmage the managers. We would scrimmage on the floor for 90 minutes or so before the players would come. Drake Morris usually was the first one in. He'd come in and want to put shots up. And so I'd usually rebound, you know, for Drake, but he was always really good to me. And I was like Drake as a player. I mean, again, you and I being the same age, when we were growing up, you'd watch the high school, you know, sectional, regional, semifinals, semi-state, like we would watch the NCAA tournament. You know, it was a one class. And by the end of the tournament, you knew East Chicago Washington's, you knew every guy on the team. You knew the Carmel team. You knew the Roosevelt team. Those New Albany teams, those were great players. And I remember the Walter Jordan versus Wayne Walls, you know, state finals, and that both of those guys were going to Purdue. I thought that was so amazing, so cool. And then to be able to be a little bit older as those guys went through school. But the 1980 team, you had a point guard in Brian Walker that didn't need to shoot. Probably should have shot more than he did.
Yeah.
But was just perfectly willing to be the distributor and to run the show. And he did a great job doing that. You know, you can't, there's not enough basketballs to go around when you got a guy scoring 25 a game, like, you know, Joe Barry was. You had a defensive specialist with Arnett, Holman, outside of the, you know, the Michigan State shot, you know, that he hits to win that game. He was certainly not supposed to be the guy shooting that shot, but Arnett's defense was incredible. You had the long arms, huge hands, gifted, again, didn't need the ball. You know, you had Drake, you had Keith Edmondson, and it was the, you had Scooby Scarce, you had Steve Walker. Again, Steve, he wasn't going to shoot. He was in there to play defense, maybe foul somebody if need be. Drake's going to pick up the loose balls. He's going to get the offensive rebound putbacks. But the offense was, you know, it was Joe Barry. That was it. Edmondson's scoring really came, you know, later in his career, but we lived and died, you know, with Joe Barry. And like this year, when Coach Painter put together a, you know, really incredible preseason schedule, our preseason schedule that year, you know, Roosevelt Bowie and Louis Orr from Syracuse, you know, came into town. But the Big Ten was a gauntlet. You had Clark Kellogg and Herbie Johnson, Herbie Williams at Ohio State. You had Isaiah Thomas and Mike Woodson at IU. You had a fantastic Iowa team that went to the Final Four. It was, I mean, Larry Bird and Indiana State came to town. Yeah. Michigan State had Magic. I mean, I moved to the visitors bench my sophomore year because I knew the teams that were coming in. So we got to rebound on the visitors end, right? And there's only a couple of managers down there. Yeah. And so the ball would bounce to me and guys are doing this, you know, like I'm going to hold that ball until Magic needs it or Bird needs it. So I can say I threw a pass to Magic or Bird versus just handing them a towel and a cup of water. It was an unbelievable experience. I mean, we had just amazing teams come through Mackey and then to beat IU on the road to the Final Four. There's nothing, nothing sweeter, you know, than that.
Yeah.
Mike Woodson's last game.
Yeah. Poor Mike had such back problems and was hurt that year, but he came back to play in that game, one of the most memorable wins in Purdue basketball history. And of course, then beating Duke and Bill Foster, and the year before Mike Krzyzewski took the job at Duke, Purdue wins that game and heads to the Final Four. So that was a remarkable time. And you're right. And you know, it's interesting. I was going to say about Ed, what interesting is, to Ed's credit, two things. One, a difficult one. I never knew your dad passed away at that time, and how that changed your life. And obviously I heard that story, and how you've persevered on a personal level is remarkable, because that could not, I know that wasn't easy. It's not even easy 43 years later. Yeah. Right. So, and then also you never talked about your relationship with the Crocs ever. I never knew that. I didn't know that about you. And I think I knew you worked at McDonald's, but I didn't know that. And that's a credit to you of people might treat you. And to be clear, I'm sure, I know you've done well financially, and you're in the financial planning. They'll retire now, but you didn't inherit the entire empire. Let's just say that.
You've done well, but that's not, you work for a living
your entire life.
They were very generous with charities. And, you know, my grandparents and my parents we were very blessed. I mean, you're just a stockholder at McDonald's.
Yeah.
You did fine, you know, over the years. And the stadium store, the cool story about when the stadium store was built, the Northwestern stadium store, it was owned by all of the kids and grandkids. So it was equal shares, you know. So when that store sold, each of the kids got a portion of it. When we sold the McDonald's stores to the company back in 1975, 74, then, you know, those shares were split equally amongst the family members. So McDonald's was very good to me. I just didn't choose to stay there. Just the family, that part of it would have been difficult for me without my dad. And now I serve on the Ronald McDonald House, you know, board of directors here in Gainesville. And I waited until after retirement, because I knew when I got involved, I was going to immerse myself and then that story came out. A buddy of mine here in town had heard it from somebody else, and he has a podcast, and he just says, "You're going to be my first guest." And I told him, not until I retire. When I retire, I'll do that, because you think about it, in any business, whatever you're doing, especially in financial advising, how are you going to get somebody to listen to you if they know that story? They're just going to want to talk about that. And you know, I'm not sitting on Ray Kroc money, right? I'm sitting on Grandpa and Grandma Groh money and Bob and Sue Potts money. But it was almost like therapy, having a chance to tell those stories to somebody other than family. Like you and I were very close, and the managers that I spent time with, and again, reconnecting at our reunions. I mean, just, I miss that we did we weren't able to spend more time together in between. And then lastly, when we went and had our alumni reunion this last time, and Coach Painter and his wife were nice enough to have us out for, you know, the post alumni game. And right. It poured down rain, right? Poured down rain. The pop-up tents are blowing everywhere, and we're in the house, and we're around the pool table, and Coach Painter finds out that we were on the 1980 team, right? We were managers for the 1980 team, and he's talking to us like he's jealous that we got to experience that. And really just a completely authentic, just sharing stories. And I remember asking him about what he thought about Zach playing for the Canadian national team and kind of missing the summer experience with the team, and if he thought that was going to be beneficial. And he was 100%, it's going to help us. He's playing with unbelievable talent. He's not getting to play probably as much as he wants, but this is going to benefit him. It's going to benefit our team. And man, was he right. And Zach has just been on a mission, probably as much as anybody, saying, I'm coming back and we're going to win this thing. And almost to where, you know, he didn't want to give any additional comments to the, I know it drives the media people crazy.
Oh yeah.
He's just going right back to his, all I'm worried about is the next game. All I'm worried about is winning and moving on. And one of the greatest seasons in NCAA history. When you see the people that have done they're all NBA Hall of Famers, first ballot Hall of Famers. It's amazing. So I'm just, you know, like I'm a rabid Purdue fan on a normal day. God help the people at the Chamber of Commerce luncheon today that, you know, and I'm and our speaker is Scott Strickland, who's the AD of University of Florida, is our speaker today. And I'll be pounding my Purdue chest at the meeting.
You will, and good for you. And that, I was going to take last comments. One, Matt Painter, that's what makes him great, is that Gene Katie brought basketball family back. Matt Painter's taken it a whole nother level in the fact that he invites managers. You know, we all have had great experiences of having that experience, but we're important to him. And he gets that. And that to me is a sign of a great leader. Is that it takes everybody to be it. You and I worked with a good friend, John Stevens, our sophomore year. And these are some of the best people I've ever been around. Scott Stridelmeyer, Kerry Walsh, Tony Natale, all those guys are dear, dear friends and important people. No, we weren't Joe Barry Carroll, but we were a part. We always felt like we were part of the program, but Matt has done such a good job of keeping that as part of it. And for your luncheon today, you can remind the Florida AD that Purdue can stand in the way of back-to-back championships for UConn because Florida U of F is the last one to do it. So remind him that if Purdue could somehow find a way, and I think Purdue will find a way to compete against UConn. I don't know if they'll beat them. They got to beat North Carolina State first. We know that. But it's going to be fun. Fun to be out there and be out there with you and see some folks. I think the funny thing about Detroit is there was no handshaking after that game. It was all hugs. I mean, grown men hugging everybody. It was a great thing. And
you're hugging Purdue people you don't know, right?
Yeah, I know. Thank God COVID was passed because we were able to enjoy every step. So have a great rest of your birthday. We appreciate so much your time and your insight into this. And like I said, we will link also these other two podcasts. You want to learn a little bit more about the McDonald's. A lot more to Ed Potts than just the McDonald's story, but that is a big part. I think that Purdue basketball thing is a big part of his life as well. So best of your birthday, and I hope you get a great meal. I know you'll get a great meal tonight. I had to ask you, did you eat at McDonald's in Detroit? Because you're famous for doing that. Or you say you always do, right?
Of course I did. Yeah. And Reagan did too. She's double cheeseburger, no onions. That's a given.
There you go.
Thank you, Alan.
Hey, we want to thank our mutual friends, the Arnie's and the restaurant we love in Lafayette and throughout the state of Indiana. And they're part of the great story of Lafayette and West Lafayette, and really the state of Indiana. We appreciate them too. All right, we'll be doing another one of these before long. A lot going on in the site this week as we get ready. I don't know how we can even, there's no way we can do it justice. That's kind of overwhelming, actually, a little bit of what's going to be going on in the world of Purdue basketball here over the next few days. But Ed, have a great birthday, and thanks again.
See you, Boiler Up.